Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Mays, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Brian McKeon. He'll be answering your most important questions on the Madison, the river of many faces. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Brian a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and your email address on the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Brian McKeon about the Madison, a river of many faces. Brian McKeon is the owner and outfitter of Montana Angler Fly Fishing. Montana Angler specializes in building Montana's finest fly fishing packages. Their guides have over 100 years of combined experience on blue ribbon rivers like Madison, Yellowstone, Gallatin, and Missouri. With access to 11 rivers, 9 spring creeks, Yellowstone Park, and several private ranches, their guides can always help you find productive fishing opportunities. Montana Angler Fly Fishing can design your trip with a stay at several fishing lodges, hotels, vacation rentals, or backcountry camps. For more information about fly fishing in Montana, visit www.montanaangler.com. That's www.montanaangler.com. Before we introduce Brian, I'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine. So you have 2 chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link in the Brian section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a one-year subscription to Hooked Now, an online e-zine published by Dave Hughes, Rick Akeley, and Skip Morris. And if you haven't visited their site, go to www.hookednow.com. Now, all 3 of these gentlemen have appeared on our show as guests and are very well known for their expertise, so you can imagine what's coming out of that Hooked Now e-zine that they're publishing. So here's how you can win that tonight. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The question is going to be about something we talk about during the show. You must submit your answer along with your name and location using the text box on our homepage, same place that you ask questions. So listen closely, use your best typing skills, and see if you can't win that Hooked Now 1-year subscription. Tonight our guest is Brian McKeon, and Brian has been a fly fishing guide across the Rocky Mountain region for 17 years and has spent the last 9 seasons guiding and outfitting on the Madison River and surrounding Blue Ribbon Rivers of southwestern Montana. The appeal of the Big Sky State brought Brian and his wife Ann to Bozeman, where he teaches middle school science while running Montana Angler Fly Fishing. He has been fishing, guiding, and outfitting in Montana for 9 seasons on rivers that include the Madison, Gallatin, Yellowstone, Boulder, Jefferson, Missouri, Stillwater, and Ruby. He also spent significant time fishing in nearby Yellowstone Park. His passion for fly fishing has led to destination travels that include Alaska, Ireland, Scotland, Costa Rica, Honduras, Canada, Belize, Mexico, Russia, Argentina, Chile, New Zealand, and the Bahamas. His outfitting company, Montana Angler Fly Fishing, also represents several international lodges. Brian hosts groups of anglers on destination trips each season. Although Brian spends significant time guiding the traditional floats and access areas of Blue Ribbon Rivers, his passion is to find the off-the-beaten-path waters to access trout that receive very little pressure. He is an accomplished Class 5 whitewater oarsman and often applies his experience in whitewater to gain access to rugged canyon stretches of rivers that see very little angling pressure. Brian is a frequent contributor to fly fishing content for several online publications, including About.com, PAFlyFish.com, and he makes regular appearances on Trout TV, which features fly fishing waters across the western U.S. and Canada. Well, Brian, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thanks, Roger. Looking forward to doing this with you.
Yeah, well, it'll be lots of fun, lots of fun. We got a bunch of questions, and, of course, the Madison is on the bucket list of many a fly fisher, I'm sure, across the world, as are many of the rivers in Montana. But what a great one to talk about, and right in your backyard up there. So let's get to it here. We alluded in our show title, Madison is as a river of many faces. So and I guess some people could even say it could be different rivers altogether, depending on what section you look at. But can you kind of give us a general overview of the river? And then later on, I'm going to ask you to dig deep into each of these sections to give the folks a real picture of what each of these sections is like. But give us an overview of top to bottom of what we're looking at here.
Sure. Well, Roger, really quickly, we'll hit the three main sections of the river, which are inside of Yellowstone Park, below Hebgen Reservoir, and then below Ennis Lake onto the mouth where it forms the Missouri. And they're all very different subsections. The Madison actually begins in Yellowstone Park, where the Gibbon and the Firehole join forces, and they're really famous and high-quality trout rivers in their own rights. And the upper section of the river in the park, we think of that as a spring and a fall fishery. The thermal influence is heated up a little bit in the summer. And then once it exits the reservoir at Hebgen, it has a tailwater effect, so we have nice, clean, cold water that comes out. And we enter probably the most famous part of the Madison River, which is referred to as Upper Madison. And that has some wade-only fishing sections in the really famous 50-mile ripple, which is a float fishery. And eventually then the river flows into Ennis Lake. And out of Ennis Lake, it runs into a wilderness area called Bear Trap Canyon, which has rugged major rapids, and on through what we call the Lower Madison River, which also has temporal issues in the summer. The trout don't leave there, but we tend to fish that in the spring and the fall.
Okay. So it actually starts in Wyoming and ends up in Montana, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It starts in Wyoming inside of Yellowstone National Park.
Okay. Is there, Chuck in Santa Rosa, California, want to know what are your favorite areas to fish on the Madison? Is there one particular section you like better than another?
That's a very, very tough question to ask. You know, one of the reasons that I personally love the Madison so much, and as do many other folks and our guides and you know, people that visit from out of state and locals, is it is truly a river that is blue ribbon in 12 months out of the year. There's always a great place to fish the Madison. And, you know, it depends on the month. You know, some months you're going to fish in one area while others are not productive and are full ice. I really love going after the parts of the Madison that have big trout, which a lot of the parts do. So I guess I kind of gravitate towards, you know, like the lower Madison in the spring when we have a shot at the really big fish, kind of switching up to the upper Madison when it turns on during runoff and just after. And, of course, the legendary brown trout run out of Hebgen Reservoir in Yellowstone Park in October. Those certainly kind of bring a twinkle to my eye.
Okay. Yeah, hard to pin you down when each area becomes a favorite depending on the season.
Based on a certain week of the year, and then your answer kind of changes every couple of weeks.
Yeah. And we've got a couple of questions about this. Terry in Port Collins wants to know about, are there certain sections that are best for walk-wade fishing rather than floating? And then he also asked about what tributaries are most productive to fish. Could you kind of address that?
That's a really good question. And it's, you know, we've actually had a lot of long-time clients that have come to us because they came out, you know, reading about legendary rivers in Montana and fished for some time on their own. And some of the rivers that are large and famous, like the Madison, the Yellowstone, Missouri, they can be daunting and intimidating because of their size. And there are, you know, the Madison has some of the best float fishing in Montana, but it also has some of the best weight fishing. And that sometimes surprises people because they might have visited the Madison, looked up and down the river, and it looks like one giant ripple where they visited it, and you don't really know where to begin and where to end and, you know, how to fish it. So there are some very distinctive sections that are excellent for wade fishing, and there are actually parts of the river that you are not allowed to float fish. So, you know, kind of Yellowstone Park, I would begin with, is wade fishing only. And so from its confluence, where it forms, and that's in Junction all the way to the park boundary, and where it enters Heaven Lake, that section is wade fishing only. And of course, there are some better, some areas that are better than others in that stretch. There's a lot of water that's kind of has lower trout counts, and we'll get to that in a few minutes. When the river comes out of Heaven Lake, there is a wade fishery we call sort of between the lakes, between Heaven Lake, and there's a natural lake formed in the 50s from a big earthquake called Quake Lake. And that section is wade fishing only. It's a really good spring and fall fishery. And then we have the section right below Quake Lake, which we call the slide. And that section is wade fishing only all the way to Lions Bridge, where the West Fork of the Madison enters. And you're allowed to use a boat there, but you can only use a boat as a taxi, so which we often do, but you cannot fish from the boat. You have to wade fish. And that's very productive. There's several very good access points for folks that are, you know, coming to visit and they're not being guided to can fish that long stretch of water. And there's another really good wade section called the Channel of the Madison, which is downstream of Ennis, about a six-mile section of water where the river braids, and it sometimes resembles a large river, sometimes it resembles many small creeks. And that is wade fishing only as well, and again, you can use a boat to access it. That is a little more difficult to access. There's really just one public access. There's the bridge, and then they're about 2 miles down, you have Valley Garden access, and it's kind of willow-choked along the banks. But that is wade, that's a really good wade, place to wade fish. Another great place for wade fishing is Bear Trap Canyon, which you can access by going around Ennis Lake and driving into the top of the canyon. And there's a dam there, and below that dam, there's some very nice wade fishing. It tends to be a winter and early spring fishery is when it tends to be best, and then again late in the fall. And the lower Madison is a good wade fishery, but you really have to know exactly where to be because it can be kind of nondescript and wide open, and it's not the best place if you're targeting it from out of state. You don't know that section really well. The fish are just, there's just certain places to wade fish. But, you know, the wade fishing only, if you come to the Madison and you're going to fish on your own, and you really, you know, you're probably your best bet is going to be the upper wade sections near, in Montana, either between the lakes in the springtime or the slide area, from the Earthquake Lake all the way down to Lions Bridge. And then if you're coming to visit in the fall, and then, of course, Yellowstone inside the park.
That's great. Yeah, it sounds like a lot of wade fishing. No lack of opportunity there. Now, you mentioned Quake Lake. I just, that's kind of a interesting, got some interesting history around it. You want to tell people what happened there?
Yeah, there was, well, you know, Yellowstone National Park is home to the world's largest volcano, and so this is sometimes a surprise to folks. Unlike any other volcano in the world, it's over what's called a geologic hotspot, so it's an area where the mantle below the Earth's crust is sort of upwelling. It's very similar to Hawaii, but unlike Hawaii, the hotspot is underneath the continent, and so the kind of rock is much different, and there are some massive, you know, explosions in Yellowstone, 600,000 years apart, so it's, you don't have to worry about it happening tomorrow. But that big magma chamber is that's what causes all the hot springs and Old Faithful. And then it kind of breathes. It'll upwell. It'll, you know, gather some pressure and release some pressure, and that results in flexing of the Earth's crust and earthquakes. So there was a major earthquake in the 50s, and that actually caused in what was called the Madison Canyon. Downstream of Earthquake Lake, or Heaven Lake, a big chunk of the mountain broke loose, and it roared down, and it buried a campground. It killed several people that were camping, and it formed a lake, and they actually evacuated the town of Ennis and the towns downstream for fear it would rupture, and the Army Corps of Engineers came in and bulldozed a little bit of a way to make it a little bit safer, but it stabilized and formed a lake. And there's really interesting dead trees in the lake that were remnants of that. So it does have some interesting geologic history.
Yeah, really kind of unfortunate. Yeah, I was reading, I think it was actually 26 people were killed in that campground. So keep that in mind, folks, when you're there. It's kind of a memorial site almost as well as a new lake. We had Chuck again from Santa Rosa. He sent in several questions. Thanks, Chuck, for participating so much. He said, how would you assess the Madison as a quality fishery these days, especially as compared to before whirling disease?
That's another great question. You know, whirling disease, if folks aren't familiar, it's a small microscopic organism, and it infects all trout. It came from Europe, so the brown trout, which are native to Europe, had grown essentially largely immune to it, but it was sort of a new threat to the non-native the fish that were not from Europe, so the rainbow trout or the heifer trout. And it really hit the Madison hard in the 90s, and the population of rainbow trout really plummeted. And it causes the fish to have some, it distorts their spinal cord and they can swim in circles, hence the name. In Montana, we don't stock any trout, so in rivers and streams. And, you know, places like Colorado, the solution in some cases was the stocked rivers were being infected with more fish. And in Montana, wisely, the biologists decided not to do that. And the river has basically rebounded naturally. You know, the fish that did survive had some immunity to the disease. So the rainbow trout numbers are basically at where they were prior to whirling disease. And that's been a really, so it's an extremely productive fishery. And, you know, trout numbers vary, of course, depending on the section of the river, but we'll run between 4,000 and 5,000 trout per mile. And it's again gone back to being dominated by rainbow trout as the dominant fish, and brown trout still really important and often the biggest trout. But it's a very productive river, and we don't think too much about whirling diseases any more than Madison because it's successfully rebounded from that.
Cool. Kind of cured itself, sounds like. Yeah. Another question from Chuck. He says, on a crowded on a summer day, Madison can get very crowded. Are there any areas where a wading angler can go to get away from the crowds and still have a quality fishing experience? And to me, that always means just walk a mile away from the
crowd.
And you'll be surprisingly alone. But are there places like that where you can walk in and get away from the crowd?
Yeah, you know, there are. The crowded, I guess, is a relative term. If you compare it to places like the San Juan and the Green and some of the big tailwaters, the Bighorn, even here in Montana.
East Coast on opening day, right?
Yeah. The Madison is, it's not crowded like I've seen a lot of places in the East Coast. And and there are certain places where you're going to see some more people. The wade fishing section is popular with out-of-state anglers that are fishing on their own. And so I would say that month of July, you know, you're going to see quite a few people in that stretch. And interestingly, you know, on the float section, which starts at Lions Bridge and goes down through Ennis, you know, places like Lions Bridge, there'll be a lot of mostly guide boats and some locals, you know, putting in there early in the morning. You know, on a really busy day, it might be 30, 40 boats, but they're going to fish about a 10, 12-mile section of water, and people kind of get spread out. And so where can you go to get away from another Madison? Well, one is to get away from an access point. So, you know, in a float section, one idea is there are certain put-ins, and if you sort of go out of sync and maybe put it in a place that's not as common as a starting point, you're going to be either out ahead or way behind, the boats to put in 8 in the morning. So one of the things that I do guiding quite a bit, for example, is maybe we'll go up and fish some of the wade section, and then we'll let those boats that go in at Lions Bridge get out a couple miles ahead of us. We'll put in there, and we won't see a single soul the rest of our float. Boats came through there early in the morning. But trout are kind of funny. They, you know, sometimes trout don't wake up until later in the day, or there's a different insect hatching later in the afternoon. So when you come through, even a few hours later, it's sort of like you know, those trout are kind of fresh. As far as wading, Bear Trap Canyon is very remote. You can access it from the lake end below the dam, and you can't go too far down. It gets really rugged. There's no trail. Or you can come from the lower section, and there's an access point there, and you can hike several miles into Bear Trap Canyon. And, again, that's not always a great summer fishery, but it is certainly a way to get away from it all. Mm-hmm. But any place you can walk a little bit is certainly always a good idea.
Yeah, it's funny. You brought back an old memory. I remember fishing down in the San Juan, and we had our own boat, and we knew all the guides, you know, come down there at, I think it was like, I don't know, 8 o'clock or something, and, you know, and there's like a traffic jam getting the boats in there and stuff. And so we thought, hey, you know, let's beat the crowd, so let's go down there at like 7, and we'll fish, start fishing there and beat the crowd. And we went down, and we didn't do any good, and we didn't do any good until 8 o'clock when the boats came. So it was like, the guys knew when the water warmed up and the hatches would start and the fish would be on the feed, you know. It didn't pay to get there any earlier. <You
know? laughs> Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes you get out there and crack a dawn in August, you know, the heat of the summer, and you'll be, you know, rewarded. And,
yeah.
If you're going out there in June, yeah, you can't buy the fish some mornings until about 10 o'clock.
Yeah. So anyway, a lesson learned that day. Well, we need to, Brian, take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about the Madison.
All right.
Federation of Fly Fishers needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. It is involved in the Mangrove Recovery Initiative in Florida and the Trout of the Desert Southwest Initiative to help the recovery of rare native trout, the Endangered Fisheries Initiative, and is helping to prevent the introduction of harmful aquatic species to new waters with their clean angling pledge. The Federation won a National Conservation Award for its efforts. To continue this great work on behalf of all fly fishers, the Federation needs to increase its membership. It needs more concerned anglers willing to join in support of such projects, and by doing so, give something back to the sport that has given so much to each of us. Join the Federation of Fly Fishers today and help support their fine work. For more information, go to the Federation website at www.fedflyfishers.org. That's www.fedflyfishers.org. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Brian McGeehan about Madison, a river of many faces. If you'd like to ask Brian a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay. Okay, there a question did well before we get to this question here, Brian, I do wanna give you a chance to tell us a little bit more about your guide service and outfitting. So can you tell us a little bit more detail about the services you offer up there in Montana and elsewhere?
Yeah, sure, Roger. Well, we are strictly an outfitter, so you know, we don't sell flies and fishing rods. We just want to take people fishing. And Montana's got a really large diversity of fisheries of all types. So a lot of people hear about the Madison, the Elsa, the Missouri, and we love to fish those big famous rivers. But I guess we sort of hang our hat on diversity, and if someone comes out for 5 or 6 days, we like to really mix it up. We'll do some float fishing. We'll do some weight fishing. We'll fish a different river every day. We have small spring-fed streams that are really productive, and canyon places we hike into, and we'll whitewater raft to get away from people, and basically that's sort of what we try to do. We do a lot of packaging, so about 90% of the folks we fish with, we set up their lodging for them, and we really try to find out what they want out of their trip and give them some good guidance on what time of the year they should come out and where they should stay, and then try to put a nice fishing plan together. You know, Montana's really, we're fortunate. There's really always something good. Not everything's good every month of the year, but something's good every month of the year. So we really work hard to make sure we're always putting people in a productive area where they're going to have, you know, match their skill level to the fishing. And that's, you know, I guess being at the right place at the right time as we work really hard in that element.
Right, great. And what's your website again?
MontanaAngler.com.
Okay, MontanaAngler.com. Great. Well, we got a couple of questions here off the internet, Brian. Both have to do with similar questions, and then there was I think we actually had a question from Terry a little earlier on you know, which tributaries are the most productive to fish. But here's two more. Denny in Chico, California says, what are fishing conditions on the Madison such tributaries in late August? Are pontoon boats a good idea? And another one from Tom in Redmond, from a crowd perspective, often getting off the main river and into the feeder streams can be great. Does the Madison have other feeder streams as well as it works down the state, and are they productive? So we're all these questions are asking about the feeder streams.
The Madison, the entire basin is a productive fishery, and not just the main river. So the Madison tributaries, by and large, I mean, most of them are kind of spring. The famous tributaries are in Yellowstone, in or near Yellowstone Park. And so, you know, the two that everybody's going to talk about is the Given and the Firehole. The Firehole is one of the most unique fisheries in the world, and I think one-fifth of all the world's geysers are around Old Faithful, which is the Firehole drains. And so it's this really unique fishery. It's kind of like a big spring creek, but it has hot springs. Well, you can wet wade there and literally be in 90-degree water when you're at the mouth of one of these springs, and be catching trout in the cool water in the main river. But the flip side of that is by about the end of June, it gets too warm to safely fish. So it's a spring. It's definitely, the park opens the Memorial Day weekend, so you have about a 4 or 5 week window to fish that. And then again at the end of September and until the park closes. So the Firehole is a really good one, but it's not good when the peak of the summer tourism season hits. The Given is also a really fun one. It hangs on a little longer. It does also kind of warm up in the summer, but maybe not until mid-July. So those are really good tributaries. There's some small tributaries that are good spring fisheries that feed Hebgen Lake that come out of Yellowstone Park, like grayling, duck, and cougar, and they get some fish to come out of the lake, some rainbows. And inside the park, you got to wait till the Memorial Day weekend, but they can produce some nice fish in while there's still good flows in them. And they're not quite as productive in the fall. The West Fork of the Madison would be a decent summer fishery. It's a little more freestone, higher elevation drainage, so it stays colder and is a good place to go throw some attractor drives for smaller fish. And then once you get down below that, there's really no tributaries. You know, there's a couple little tiny ones come out of the mountains that, you know, up in the backcountry, if you're horseback in or something, would be kind of fun to cast a fly, but nothing of major note. The rest of the way down is kind of more drier, arid land without a whole lot of big tributaries.
Okay.
And then back to the question about August fishing. August fishing, most of the tributaries we talked about, that's not the time to fish in, but the main river is great because the main river has that cold influence from the bottom of Hebgen. So, you know, the main Madison, the upper Madison, not the park and not the lower Madison, is where you want to fish in August. And we have nice terrestrial fish in, and the fish become opportunistic. They'll eat down under on big sculpins. And pontoons can be effective. They're real popular. Not to necessarily fish from the pontoon. That's kind of tough, but to use it, like to work your way down the river and stop and fish.
Okay. Question from Larry Hull in Indian River, Michigan. He says, my wife and I are planning a two-week trip out west. We're planning a week in Glacier area, then a week in Yellowstone. We heard the crowds pretty daunting during tourist season on both rivers and at nearby attractions. When would you recommend we go to avoid some of the crowds and get some decent fishing without worrying about getting snowed in?
Summer is still a great time. I mean, it's not crowded by most people's perspectives. Montana doesn't have very many people that live here. So, we do mostly compete with folks that come on vacation, which tends to be July and August, of course, is the peak. But it's a great time of the year. The river fishes wonderfully. And you'll see a couple other, fishermen, but it's definitely not an elbow-to-elbow thing at all. And so that's always a winner. No one ever... you know, complains too much when they come in the middle of summer. The weather is gorgeous and the fishing is good. You know, we do love the spring and the fall. I mean, to be honest, this is one of my favorite times to fish is right now in what is kind of quote called runoff when the snow is melting. And there, it's not the tourist season yet, and a lot of fishermen avoid it because they hear the rivers get high from the melting snow. But the Madison, I would say we catch probably more big fish out of the Madison proper right now than we do, you know, any other time of the year besides, gosh, you get some big ones, I guess, in October. But it's a really nice time, and there's really nobody on the water to speak of. Some parts of the river get a little blown out, but there's a whole lot of parts of the river that are fantastic, great during runoff. And then September and October are real nice. A lot of the, you know, kids are back to school, and the just Yellowstone tourists, that drops off quite a bit, and that's a very nice time to visit. And maybe for seeing in the parks, you know, I think the traffic in September would be a real nice to combine, you know, going to see Glacier and Yellowstone, but also do some fishing. It'd be a nice time to visit.
Well, September in the Rockies is one of my favorite months. I don't care whether you're fishing, camping, or just driving around. It's just gorgeous. When does the park close?
The park closes the first weekend in November.
Oh, okay. So there's, yeah.
But the rest of the river. Yeah, the rest of the river. You know, October is amazing. I mean, we get, but you know, you want to come, if you're bringing your wife out and you're going to go kind of touring a little bit too, you always run the risk of, you know, some weather. But if we get a lot of real serious anglers that come in October, and they want to catch big fish, and we get the big lake-run trout that come out of Hevian and Quake Lake and Ennis and down in Missouri. And so that's, you know, but I don't know if I'd travel with my wife because there's always that risk that you get some cool weather.
Let's talk about equipment before we get into the specific sections of the river again. So one coming to the Madison, what size and weight rods would you bring out to cover yourself there?
Yeah, you know, our 9-foot, 5-weight, 9-foot, 6-weight, that's going to be your kind of bread and butter. All of our guides carry 6-weights. We get some wind on the big rivers like the Madison, and we like to throw big, ugly stuff. If you want to catch the big fish, you can throw big flies. They don't eat a lot of small stuff, the big 25-inch plus fish. So we like to have a rod that can, you know, buck the wind and also you know, throw big giant salmon flies or big sculpins or big streamers. I often, when we float fish, sort of like you have a caddy, you know, you can have a couple rods thrown up. So we'll have a 6-weight maybe with some nymphs, or I like to throw streamers on a 7-weight, and then I'll throw drive on a 5-weight unless it's really windy, then I'll switch that to a 6-2.
Yeah, I suppose those 6 and 7s could come in handy for doing some fishing in the lakes if you want to do any lake fishing as well.
Yeah, that's a really good general all-around Montana rod. You know, the only time we drop down below that is when we fish the Spring Creeks. Don't go to 3 and 4 weights.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And do you typically use floating lines? Is there any need for
day in, day out, we throw floating lines. About the only time that you wouldn't have a need for a sink tip, but it'll still be optional. But that is a pretty shallow river. I mean, gosh, most of the, you know, 25-inch plus trout I've caught out of it have been in less than 2 feet of water, in the riffly productive water. And even in the big, deeper buckets, the only time, you know, you'll see guys throwing sinking lines is in October, mostly up in the park when you're kind of trying to put it right in front of those false spawners and get it right down. And still, though, it might only be a 6-foot deep run, and you can definitely throw a floating line and be successful in two. So you can successfully fish the Madison with just floating lines, which is mostly what we do.
Okay. Okay, let's a question came in on the internet here from Tom in Redmond. So I'll just throw this one in here right now. It says, because you had talked about runoff. During runoff, is it really just float, or can you still wade?
The best fishing, believe it or not, is often wade fishing. It's sort of counterintuitive. The higher the river gets, the better the wade fishing gets. And we tend to fish the upper section. When you go down below, the water below Hebgen is gin clear. That's a big enough reservoir that it filters the sediment out, and so when it comes out, it's clear. And right below Hebgen, there are two tributaries that can put some sediment in, Beaver Creek and Cabin. And that is always fishable. It might look dirty, but it's never chocolate milk. It might only be 10 inches of visibility, but that's enough for fish to eat and see your flies. And what happens as that water rises during runoff is the main current is too swift. And so the fish seek out what we call the softer water, the slower water, the bank seams, the bank eddies, the inside corners. When the river comes around a bend, that inside water is slower. Behind rocks, the eddies, the slicks behind the rocks. So we look for that soft, slicky water, and the trout are just packed in there like cordwood. And, you know, just throwing big, ugly stuff, girdles. You know, it's not dry fly time, but, you know, hucking streamers and nasty big girdle bugs and sandlung worms, you know, and they'll eat it up. So that's a great, you know, strategy. The lower Madison is also, on most years, you can fish it right. We just had a three boats out yesterday in the lower Madison, and, you know, my brother's boat had a double within a minute from the boat ramp, and, you know, it just was wiped out. There were bugs hatching, and the fish are just gobbling. And so, you know, on most years during runoff, you can fish the lower Madison all the way through. On a big, big water year that we had last year, the mud can, you know, the tributaries above Ennis Lake do eventually bring in some sediment. When you get too far down, then it does become unfishable. And sometimes that can push right through the lake if it's a really monstrous, you know, year like we did have last year where there were times with the lower Madison. But you can always fish some parts of the Madison, even in the peak of a high water year.
Okay. Well, let's dive into each section. And by each section, I mean, we've kind of broken it down here. Yellowstone National Park down to Hebgen Lake, and then from Hebgen Lake down to Ennis Lake, and then from Ennis Lake to Three Forks. So let's talk about, we'll work our way from the top down, and you've already mentioned, and I think we can probably, I think we're going to cover all three sections here, but as far as the type of fish in all three sections, are we talking rainbows and browns?
You're going to get a couple cuts to sneak out of some of the trips, but it might be a year or two before I catch a cutthroat, and
okay.
Once in a while I'll catch a grayling. But, it's pretty much a brown trout and rainbow trout fishery.
Okay. Well, let's take us for a tour from Yellowstone down to Hebgen and tell us about that part of the fishery and as we go downriver there, and maybe give us some key points along the way.
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of a short section. Maybe 10 miles or so inside the park, and we're after the two tributes, you know, the Gibbon and the Firehole join at Madison Junction, and they form the Madison at that point. The Madison in the park doesn't, I don't know the exact trout numbers there, but it definitely, at least to me, it doesn't seem like it has as high of trout, resident trout that live there kind of year-round as other parts of the Madison River. It is, and it has temperature issues because of the thermal, you know, the hot springs and the geyser basin and the fire hole. So it's the spring and the fall fishery. We don't fish it a ton in the spring. I mean, when we go into the park, we really like to fish the fire hole and the gibbon, which seem like they hold more fish. And they're just such a short little window to get those. That's kind of where we gravitate towards. But there can be some good fishing in the spring. There's some PMD. They get also a, kind of a big caddis. Some guys call it the Miller caddis. It's like a size, 12 or 10. And when I fish, if I fish the Madison in the spring, I don't like to just prospect. I don't feel like there's enough fish. You kind of just go blindly, you know, working your way around. I really like to target, you know, a hatch basically. So, there's a nice evening rise. You know, sometimes those caddis come back to lay eggs in the spring, and that can be kind of fun. But, the real glory of the Madison in the park is the fall. And that's where, when you people talk about the Madison and Yellowstone, they're talking about the fall. And that's because of the fish that moved in out of Hebgen. And it's a really unique because it's not just the brown trout. You know, brown trout spawn in November. And so they, of course, do run up, and some huge brown trout. You know, it's a place you can catch a 30-inch brown trout if you're really lucky. But you got a really good shot at a 25, 26-inch brown trout, which is thought to be lucky. And you got a great shot at a 22, 23-inch fish, which is still a monster. So it attracts a lot of attention because of the giant browns that come up out of the lake. But interestingly, It also has a big run of rainbow trout, even though they're spring spawners. They run up, and I don't know if anybody's completely sure why. Maybe they come up to eat or what, but they come up.
Throwing a party.
and so the river's just packed full of fish, and it really, they start moving at the end of September, but it's definitely an October thing, and it can be really good as far as catching a lot of big fish. And you really got to know, you got to really fish the right kind of water. So a lot of the mass in the park is real flat, unproductive water. If it looks thin and riffly, it doesn't have very many fish in it. So the best, most productive water will be from the junction for a couple miles down. You're going to get some big, deep runs. And those fall trout, that's where they're going to be. They're going to be in that, the water's kind of colder. They're in a real deliberate, you know, deeper, somewhat slower runs. Maybe where nice staff, you know, kind of riffle run drops and still have some current, but, you know, it's a couple feet deep. And then, again, right before it goes in the head again, you get the real famous Barnes holes, and then you go to the Beaver Meadows. So that section, you know, guys will target as well.
Okay. Now, this upper section is all in the park, right?
Yeah, so... And we don't even use the word upper because when you talk about the upper Madison, you're talking about the section of Montana. So we always call it the Madison the Park. Although it is, yeah, you're right. It's the uppermost section of the Madison River.
Right.
And we'll refer to that as the park section of the Madison. And that, with the very last little pinch of it, comes out of the park in through Montana. And so once the park closes, you can go and have a good day in the water just above Hebgen. There's not much of it, but there's a couple good holding runs there, and so if it's like, you know, mid-November, you know, near the Baker Hole campground, you can go in the Montana section right on the edge of the park and actually still get some big browns.
Okay. So now, from a licensing standpoint, you just need a park license to fish, right?
Yep, you need a park license, like $18 for 3 days.
And you don't need a Wyoming fishing license, right?
Nope, yeah, it's a separate Yellowstone National Park fishing license.
Right. So that's all you need as an out-of-stater is the park license.
That's all you need, yeah. Anybody would need that, yeah.
And it's, this section is all, because it's in the park, is weight only, right?
Yes. There's no float fishing. I guess, you can run a motor boat in the lakes and fish on boats, but on many of the rivers, it has to be weight fishing.
Okay. And then public access, what's public access like to this?
Well, it's the park, so it's all public, and so you don't have to worry about it. You can anywhere you can see the river, hike the river. It's all fair game.
And the road pretty much follows the river.
By and large, the Beaver Meadows are away from the road. So from Hebgen, above the Baker Hole campground, up to kind of the Barnes Hole, there's a couple miles in there, and you can either kind of walk up to the campground, walk down from the Barnes Holes, or you can walk. You can park along the road and maybe walk a mile and get into the Beaver Meadows.
Okay, good. Anything else you want to say about that section before we move on here?
Well, you know, I would say, I mean, most people are going to go there for the fall run, so, you really don't want to miss. You're there on a vacation. The whole western side of the park, a lot of it is really not that good in July and August. So, if you're planning a Yellowstone Park trip, there's fantastic summer fishing in the park, but it's not necessarily the Madison or the Firehole, the Gibbon.
Okay.
Once you're into the heat of the summer, it tends to be a little farther east. So don't make the mistake of just because you've heard the Madison so awesome to go, you know, killing all of your fishing time there.
Right.
Now, if you drive down the river, get into Montana waters below the lake, and then it's a different story, but the park water's kind of getting warm.
Now, if you're out there after those fall run browns and rainbows, how do you fish those primarily?
Yeah, that's kind of a cult following, and it's funny. I mean, it's cold, and you always hear, hey, you know, when you get in that cold weather, the fish eat later in the day, but some guys will crack it dawn, before dawn, get to their favorite spots, you know, to get there at the crack of dawn to have them. You definitely got to be in a run that's productive, so looking for that the deeper runs that are going to hold fish. They're moving through the system, so they're and it continues into the Gibbon, the Firehole into the fall. So those smaller-run fish go that far out. There's really two methods. You can get some dry fly fishing. There'll be betas, and there'll be some of the smaller trout will definitely rise to the fall betas, the small little gray mayflies. But, you know, most people aren't messing with that. They're going for the big trout. And the big trout are eaten under, and maybe the most common traditional way to do it is the down and across swing and on a sink line. So, you know, starting to take the head, roll methodically, short, longer, long cast, 45 degrees down, like swinging it through the hole, let it, you know, 45 degrees up, let it sink down, kind of scour through, maybe get some slow strips. But nymphing is really productive too. And, you know, something big, something small, like a girdle bug. They'll eat egg patterns in that time of the year. And I like a nice little small, like, mayfly nymph, like a betis nymph off the back.
Okay. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll dig deeper and we'll talk about the next section. Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. They have an extensive inventory and fly tying department and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.keeney.com. That's K-I-E-N-E.com. Or call them at 1-800-400-0359. That's 1-800-400-0359. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Brian McGeehan about the Madison, the river of many faces. If you'd like to ask Brian a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately and try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. We got a couple questions here on the internet. I'm going to kind of throw these in here. Because one of the first questions that came in was from Tim in Ohio, and he says he'll be moving to Ennis in full-time in August, so the population will go up by one or maybe more. I don't know. He might have a family. Montana is growing. And he says, do you have any advice for newcomers to the area? He says, I'll give you a head start in learning the Madison. I'm new to fly fishing but love everything about it. And he'd love to spend his next few paychecks on guides, but that's not an option. Wife's probably involved there. But who knows? Anyway, that along with another question, are there any good books on the Madison you can recommend by Dan and Bismarck? For those that want to study up, do you have any recommendations?
You know, I believe Craig Matthews, he's an author out of West Yellowstone. He runs the Blue Ribbon Flies up there. He's got a book on the Madison. And then there's a lot of good just general books on Montana fishing that will, you know, give you some ideas on the Madison, the different sections. But I think Craig, my knowledge, has the only one that's really specifically targeted to Madison.
Yeah, and we did a couple interviews with Craig, one on the Yellowstone, in fact, in the park. Great guy to get in touch with. I'm sitting here looking at a book called Fly Fishing Montana by Brian and Jenny.
Yeah, I know them for a while. They're right.
And not a whole lot of information here about fishing the river, but it kind of identifies all the rivers and has some pretty nice maps in it. But and it gives some information about hatches and stuff, but not a real river guide, so to speak. But if you're looking for some maps for Montana, that's probably a good one. So those are places to start. And Tim, in answer to his question, I'd say, hey, you got a good start by just listening to the show. Ought to get you pointed in the right direction, right? So. Okay, well, let's talk more about from Hebgen down to Ennis. And again, taking us on a tour through there. And we're talking more about the river here, but maybe you can give us a little, since we're starting with Hebgen Lake, a few insights about fishing that as to how you would approach that.
Hebgen's famous in its own right. And it's a big trout, and we already know the big trout run into the park in the fall, but that's where they're at the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. And it's, gosh, I love the fish. Hebgen. It's I mostly fish it during what we call the gulper season, and there is some good fishing right after ice out, and you can hunt some streamers off the receding ice and or along the banks and, you know, get the big boys that way. And there could be some dry fly action, some big chironomids, big midges early in the year, but I tend to fish it in late summer, which is kind of fun because, you know, the other rivers have, you know, seen some fishermen when you get into, like, August, and it's just something different. But we get two hatches that bring all the fish up, and that's the Trico hatch early in the morning, tiny little itty-bitty mayflies, like size 22s. And then the big event is the Calabatus, which is a larger kind of tannish gray mayfly, and it's, you know, about a size 14, so it's a, you know, nice size mayfly. And those big trout, and gosh, the average size fish is probably an 18, 19 inch rainbow, and then there's some big browns mixed in, and you get some 22, 23s. But they literally swim around and just open in their mouths, and you'll see like sharks, and you'll see their dorsal and their tail fin, and you'll hear this big cavernous sucking sound, which is the gulping, and that's hence the name, the gulpers. So. And you get gulpers not just on Hebgen, but you get the gulpers on the sand hatches and Ennis Lake and to a certain degree on Quake Lake. You got to kind of play the wind, and you know, it starts real early in the morning, and it'll go after lunch if there's no wind. But you have to be ready if the wind blows too hard to, you know, go down to the river and do some fishing.
Do you fish it from the bank or from boats?
I mostly fish it from a boat. You know, there's a couple of spots where you can fish from a bank, but it's definitely nice to fish from a boat. And looking for areas to concentrate the fish. There's some weed beds in some places that'll form, you know, cause them to kind of cruise along a targeted path. And or you can just go in the open water, and you got to sort of predict which area they're heading next. And it's all sight fishing, which is fun. And so you're making long, accurate casts, getting out in front of big fish.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then Hebgen's got a dam, right?
Yep. So Hebgen forms a tailwater, and so there's a stretch there we call between the lakes. So this is another sort of subsection of the Madison. But so now, you know, we're talking about what we call the Upper Madison in general, and the Upper Madison begins at Hebgen Lake and it goes all the way down to the lake. And sometimes people call it a 50-mile ripple, and it's longer than 50 miles, but it's cold water, and it's the most famous part of the Madison. Partly because it fishes great in the summertime. So when the upper Madison, when the Madison and Yellowstone is warm in July and August, and the lower Madison is warm in July and August, of course, when everybody's, the majority of the people visiting come in July and August because it's nice summer weather. And that's when the upper Madison is fishing really good. So it's very famous, and we'll kind of start from the top and work our way down. The between the lakes section is kind of just a couple miles, and it's between Hebgen Lake and Quake Lake, and it's gin clear at where it comes out of Hebgen, and if it's a runoff, there's a couple tributaries about halfway down that put some sediment in, but you can always still fish it. I personally fish it mostly in the spring, like right now. You know, a lot of the rainbows come up to you know, get in their spawn, and you can do well, and there's some big browns that get caught in the fall in October, so if you don't want to go into the parks chase them, you can go into that section and you might get lucky and hit one of the big fish that comes out of Quake Lake. And it's, you know, beautiful water. It's wade fishing only, and you know, you'll see probably the most popular in the spring, and you know, this time of year right now, like April and May, you'll see some people, and if you find a way to get to the other side of the river, that can be kind of fun. I sometimes take my boat just to cross the river, and then you can really have some unpressured fish on that side. So that's a real productive fishery. You know, you can definitely, it's cold through the summer too, so but it gets more pressure. A lot of the folks at the campgrounds and stuff that are waiting will go in there.
What about during winter?
You know, it's a winter fishery too. It's a little bit of out of my way, you know, and we have much better winter fisheries closer to me, so I don't go up there personally too often to fish in the winter. And the other trick with fishing it in the winter is you get a pretty good snowpack there, and it's just flat out hard to get up and down the river. The little road that goes is buried in snow, and so right where the dam comes out, you can park right there and sort of tromp down or some kind of snowshoe the way down and get in the river. But you know, that's that's kind of it. But it does fish well, you know, just little small midges and things like that. But there's some other maybe better winter fisheries, including the lower Madison, which where I would maybe recommend for winter fishing.
In fact, we just got a question in on the Internet. It's Durand in La Crosse, Wisconsin. He says, my family and I go out to West Yellowstone every February. Can you recommend areas to fish at that time?
Yeah, so the, you know, February, you got to, well, some of the Madison's closed. So, you know, Rivers of Montana, the opening season for, you know, May 19th, or the third Saturday in May, which is May 19th this year. And so parts of the upper Madison are closed. Now, Between the Lakes is open year-round. So, but again, it's the access issues. You know, it might be worth a day for sure, but the park's closed. So there's not a lot of fishing out of left in the winter. But, you know, but I guess you can do it. And, yeah, the better winter fishery and the Madison would be farther downriver.
Okay, let's, and then Quake Lake,
Yep, the Quake's got some big giant fish in it too, and it doesn't have quite as intense of hatches, but you can, strip some streamers, and it's kind of fun, all that standing timber to kind of, you almost feel like you're bass fishing sometimes, and you can get some big browns. So that's you know, some guys enjoy that as well. And then below Quake, there's
Brian, we did have a question coming from George in Alabama asking about Quake Lake. And he said it's still full of big fish. I think you already answered that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tough to land. I don't know if that has to do with the trees or.
I guess, you know, I mean, it's a lake. The only thing that would be to contend with if you're near the trees, but otherwise.
He says, how is the walk-in access these days? Can you still wade upstream as far as you want to go?
I think he might be talking about the slide below Quake Lake. So that would be the next section, which is what we call the slide because of the landslide which forms quickly. And so right after that, the river tumbles down. It's probably besides Bear Trap Canyon, you know, the fastest water on the Madison. And that's where George is kind of talking about, you know, is it hard to land big fish? Well, there are big fish there. I don't think there's the biggest fish in the Madison are in the slide, but there's definitely some big browns that go 20, 25, 26. We get a whole lot of fish in the 17 to 20-inch range, which are certainly nice-sized trout. Really high concentrations. There's a lot of trout in the slide. So from that landslide down a few miles, and then eventually the gradient, it still stays swift, but it tapers off just a bit. So you have there's great access in that area. And yes, you can fish, you know, all the way up and down that section. You can go to Reynolds Pass and hike up, you know, all the way to the slide where you can. There's a spot where you can kind of hike across some public land and access it halfway through. And it tends to be, it can be really good just about the entire time it's open. Now that section doesn't open until the opener, May 19th, or I should say the third Saturday of May. So you got to wait till then. And right now it's on fire. It's just opened up, and the water's up, and the fish are in the soft water, like we talked about earlier. It does get popular. Like, gosh, it seems about the 1st of July, we get a lot of folks coming in. It's easy to read for the Madison, so a lot of people like it. You can see rocks, and you can see eddies, and you can see seams that are really pronounced. And so it's sort of easy to guess where a fish might be. And it's wade fishing only, so we often use the boat during high water season, like a taxi, and kind of whole hop our way down and just sort of cherry pick the best water. But it certainly is, a lot of people do enjoy fishing it in the summer months.
And now, are you still talking above Reynolds Pass Bridge?
Yep, we're talking about, all the way above, maybe we'll say all the way above Lyons Bridge. So that's what when we look at a map there, you're going to see Earthquake Lake. And from Earthquake Lake, from that natural dam, all the way to Lyons Bridge, where the West Fork of the Madison enters, that's all the way a wade fishing only section. Mm-hmm. And you can use a boat to go down through there and get out and fish, but you can
park. There is a put in there.
Put a boat in Reynolds Pass. Yep, and go down, and there's one or two access points. Mm-hmm. And then you can go to $3 Bridge and walk in. So that's a popular spot to access it. As well, and there's one or two other spots, Pine Butte and of course, up above Lions Bridge. So a very popular section of Madison, and the fishes get into the fall as well.
So from Lions Bridge down, can you fish from a boat?
Yes. So now this is what we tend to call the 50-mile ripple and the float fishing section. So from Lions Bridge, where the West Fork of the Madison enters, and yeah, you have to physically go under the bridge to start fishing. And from Lions Bridge all the way down to Ennis Bridge, the town of Ennis, where I think 2D7 crosses the river right there, that whole section is you allowed to float fish. Now, you can obviously wade fish as well. That part of the river is, let's say, from Lions Bridge, maybe let's say all the way down to Varney Bridge. The wade fishing, you really got to know where to go because it really is a giant ripple. And you can go over and walk out. I mean, it's some of the most productive trout water on the earth because, you know, you go to a river where it's big, giant, deep in the middle, and it kind of looks cool, but the reality is sunlight doesn't penetrate all the way to the bottom, and it's not productive except for the margins. The Madison is wall-to-wall productive bottoms.
And stoneflies in there?
Stonefly, the Madison is a stonefly and a caddis river. That is the bread and butter of the Madison as far as insect life goes. I mean, there's certainly some mayfly hatches that are important, but the giant Pteranarsis salmon flies, the 2 to 3 inches long, golden stone flies, yellow sallies, that's a huge food source for the trout. Even when they're not hatching, they'll eat those. That's a multi-year life cycle. Those things are always in the river, and those trout, eat those nymphs all year round. And so, but it is that you can catch a fish in the middle of the Madison River. You don't need to be on the banks when the water is at normal levels. And that's one of the reasons the river's so good. So from that float fishing section is mostly fished from drift boats. And not that you always fish while fishing from the boat. There are certain times where the river compresses and the fish will just stack up around giant rocks, which were left by there was a big glacial flood at one point and rolled these huge rocks and they kind of look out of place, especially from Lyons Bridge down to just below McAtee Bridge. That's probably the most productive as far as trout numbers. More interesting water. You know, the Madison's really subtle in certain places, and you got to really look at water color, and you look for, like, the blue water means it's a little deeper, and it might be a depression, it might hold fish. But that section is real popular because it's a little more diverse, and you'll see these big, giant rocks, some nice inside bends, a couple places where there's some islands and some features along with that, and really high trout numbers. So that's a very, probably the most popular float section of the Madison. Once you get down below McAtee Bridge, the river becomes very few big rocks and very uniform. I think my observations would be probably less overall trout. Some really monsters, some of the biggest trout I've landed have been in that stretch. But that's truly just one big ripple. And once you hit Varney Bridge, the river changes a whole lot, and you're still in the float section. And from Varney Bridge down to Ennis, it picks up some gradient. You get a lot of big bends and real big, like, undercut banks, a lot of braids, more noticeable buckets. And so really interesting water. Your rainbow trout number starts to drop, and you start to get maybe a higher percentage of brown trout, although rainbows probably still dominate. And when you get about 3 miles from Ennis, the river winds out quite a bit, but still has really good water. And that's real popular for folks fishing with pontoons. I really like that when the water drops and you can really sort of target some of the little subtle features, the little gravel scour depressions and things like that where that'll concentrate trout.
We just while you're talking, I had a question come in from Denny in Chico, California. He says, what are some good pontoon stop wade fishing areas on Upper Madison? For the average pontoon boater. So,
yeah, they're hard to fish from on the Upper Madison because it's a fast river. So you really want to focus on places where you can stop and wade fish along the way. Well, one would be that slide area. Now you have to remember, you got to be you can't be sitting in the boat. You got to be out of the boat to fish by regulations. You got to be just real careful that you follow the rules. So that would be a good one. And then probably that area from Varney Bridge down. you know, that's kind of popular with some guys because you do get some more structure as far as current features and noticeable, you know, troughs where ripples drop in and inside corners where ripple drops into a bigger slow pool, like on a bend, and you can sort of sit on the inside of that for the fish come in to feed and those ripple drop-offs. And so that's a kind of a popular place with the and you want to make sure you don't do it too long of a float. You know, like if you go and put in a McAtee or you put in a story dish, you got to go kind of a long way to the next access, and you're not going to have a lot of time to wade fish. So when you get closer to NS, there's a lot more access points, and I think that's maybe another reason it's pretty popular with pontoon boats is you can do a 3-mile float, which gives you a lot more time to stop and wade fish.
Okay, great. So sounds like one of the big hatches there is the salmon fly hatch bearing. And what time of year is that?
Yeah, the salmon fly, well, it starts, it kind of depends on where you're at. You do get a little salmon fly in the park, and you definitely get a salmon fly in Bear Trap Canyon, which is below the Ennis Lake. So Bear Trap Canyon salmon fly hatch, it, on a normal water year, the water's raging in there, and it's just not really fishable. But on a low water year, it can be epic. And that's going to be early June when you get a low water year to fish the salmon fly. And in the park, it's early June, too, because, again, those are the hot spring influences. Now, the Upper Madison is probably where it's most famous. And that's going to be a late June, or it depends on how cold the year has been, how high the water is. Last few years, we've had salmon flies well into July before we saw them hatching. But we tend to think of it as like the last week of June, maybe into the July 4th kind of weekend. And it's an event, you know. It's kind of there's nothing quite like it. It's kind of like a drug, you know. I mean, you catch a giant fish on a salmon fly and you're ruined. And it happens. One of the biggest trout I've ever seen in the Madison was caught on a size, you know, 4 salmon fly, and just came up and destroyed it. And it was a big giant 25-inch brown, and that was amazing to see things like that. The problem with the salmon fly is they're so stinking big, the fish gorge on them, and they get full. And I'll tell you, the worst days I've ever had them. The Madison is one of the most consistent rivers on the planet. Like, it never shuts you out unless there's just massive changes in water level or something. But day in, day out, you always catch fish in the Madison, and regardless of the time of year, except when you chase the salmon fly hatch. You know, there's nothing more frustrating than floating that river and seeing these 3-inch bugs like fluttering in the water and nothing's eating them. And you don't, you know, so when you go into the heart of the hatch, that sometimes happens. And the fish can get so full that you just don't catch any. And you might catch one or two, and they're like literally puking up salmon flies.
Okay.
So the salmon
we did do a show with Bob Jacklin on the salmon fly hatch back in June of 2006. So if anybody wants to dig into that a bit more, just go to the archive and type in salmon fly hatch and or the Madison, either way, and you'll get a show on just that. But, okay, let's we're running out of time here, so I'm just looking through my notes here. Anything else specific? Of course, we need a Montana license to fish this section, and it sounds like this section is probably one of the sections that you can fish almost year-round then.
There are parks that are open year-round. It doesn't really get good until the water warms up, like in April, on the sections you're allowed to fish in April.
Okay.
And then the lower sections of float fishing can blow out during runoff, but then, of course, you can go up high above the West Fork. But it really can be dynamite.
Now, you said different sections open up, so there are specific dates and times for different
sections. Yeah, you've got to really check your regulations when you come to the Madison because different sections of the river have different regulations. For example, you can fish year-round between the lakes. Once you get below the slide, you can't start fishing until the opener of May 19th. Once you get below McAtee Bridge, you're allowed to fish year-round down the Ennis Bridge, and then again you have so you got to kind of be careful on the rigs, but there's always something to fish year round if you're in the right places.
Okay. So Are we ready to move on down, do you think, from Ennis to Three Forks?
Yeah. So the Ennis to Three Forks section, well, we sort of think of that as two distinct units or sections of the river. Bear Trap Canyon is from Ennis Lake down, and there's a wilderness area there, a federal wilderness area, and it lasts for, gosh, about 8 miles or so. And it's significant whitewater. You can float fish it, but you got to know what you're doing. I've spent years guiding in there, and gosh, can't tell you how many people just really get badly injured, and there's been deaths in there. There's a big rabbit called the kitchen sink, and it's definitely not to be taken lightly. So you have to have a good size whitewater raft. You have to have, you know, years and years of rowing experience to safely row that. You have to can't be in there too high of water levels. We tend to go under 3,000 CFS. But that's a great fishery, a lot of fish in there, really scenic, not too many people. And you can also hike into that section. Now, Ennis Lake tends to get a little warm, and so the water temperatures now become an issue when we go down below the lake. Up in the canyon, way up high, it can fish, you know, in the middle of summer, in the mornings, and by the end of the later in the day, they really clamp down, you know, after lunchtime or so. And once you get down out of the rapids area, it's really a spring and a fall fishery. But that being said, really high trout numbers right there at the mouth of the canyon. And so this section of the river now we often call the Lower Madison. And very different than the upper river. It's much lower gradient, lots of weed beds. And
are you talking about now starting from like Warm Springs?
Yeah, so okay. We tend to think of the Lower Madison as being Warm Springs, where the first access point where you don't have to run Class 5 rapids down to like Black's Ford and Gray Cliffs is. Once you get below Gray Cliff, there's not a lot of access. You have to go all the way to Three Forks, which is a really long, gosh, I don't know, 16 or so miles. So that's seldom fished, and it also has the trout numbers drop off rapidly because of the thermal issues. So the most fish in the Lower Madison are between Warm Springs and Black's Ford, and then the trout numbers begin to drop off, still decent down at Great Cliff, and then they really start dropping off below that. But there are some big trout down there, so, you know, it is still a place to explore, expecting to catch less fish, but maybe trying to catch a big one. So the Lower Madison all the way down to about Black's Ford is really interesting. Flint fishery has big weed beds, and the trout really, it's definitely not really a bank fishery. We really focus on these weed beds. That's where you get your trout, and they're going to be on top of the weed beds at high water. At low water, they'll go to the edges. They'll be in the little depressions and troughs inside the weed beds. There's certainly some exceptions, some deeper runs. You know, float fishing is definitely the way to do it. There is some really nice wade fishing, but it's really, really subtle. And to just go out and wade fish the Lower Madison, it's going to take you a couple years to sort of figure out where those spots are at. So, you know, my recommendation there, folks that really don't know the Madison that well or don't have a lot of time to invest in it, is, you know, you want to float it. And even then, it can really frustrate people until they sort of figure it out. It's a really subtle river, this section. And but it has some giant trout, and they're really healthy. There's a lot of crayfish. The water's warmed up enough. It's really good crayfish habitat, and those big brown trout, they are carnivores, and they're eating crayfish and eating sculpins, and then that tends to how you catch those large fish.
I know, and I don't know if it's this section, but I know we did a show with Kelly Gallup on streamer fishing and talking about hitting the banks with that. And you see a lot of people fishing the Madison in that manner. Is this a section that would work well in, or is it
no
upper section?
The bank. You fish banks when fish are on the banks, and fish are not always in the banks. Fish are on banks when the water's up, and so on the upper Madison, which is much swifter, when runoff first ends and it becomes clear, or when you're above the West Fork. Yeah, there's fish all the way along the banks. Now, the West Fork is waiting, so then you're kind of on the bank pitching right above you. But when you're float fishing in the Lyons Bridge, that's when the fish are packed on the banks. They're all on the banks, or they're behind the rocks in the big slicks. And the main current's too swift. so you're not going to catch very many fish there. And it depends on how high the water is, too. I mean, on a big water year where you're pushing 3,000, all the fish are on the banks and in those slicks. Now, as the water compresses and recedes, that changes. And those fish move, and then the banks are marginal, and then the water drops and becomes skinny along the banks, or some of the banks, and a lot of the fish moves out into the main river. And, you know, so you kind of change your tactics as far as where you fish as the year progresses.
So, yeah, so the think about the water level and also the clarity, I suppose, too. Good. And I fished that weed section. I know what you're talking about. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that anywhere else.
It almost kind of reminds you of like a giant spring creek. Really productive thick hatches in the spring and sometimes in the fall. And there's some monster fish, you know. And it's a little fickle. There are days where you go out there for the big fish, you know. When it's fishing wild every day, you know, sometimes you're just all into these little rainbows. And when I say little, I mean they're, so, you know, 12 to 15 inches. So they're nice-sized fish. But we get excited about the giant fish in the lower Madison. And you'll go there some days, and you'll hit big fish all day long. And, I mean, I've had days out there where we've literally, you know, hooked over, you know, 10 fish over 19 inches. And you go 3 more days and not see a single one that size. So it's a great place to fish when you get cloud cover and spit and rain. That's when you can really hammer those giant browns, when you get the right kind of really foul weather.
Well, when all the way down the river, you've talked about big fish being in the river at almost every point. So
that's the truth. You mentioned Bob Jacklin. He caught a big 30-plus fish between the lakes. The guy caught a big 30-plus inch fish way down by Three Forks. There's big fish to come up by Heckin. So there are. I've seen quite a few fish. I've never got a 30-incher out of Madison, but I've seen several in the 25, 26-inch range. And then every year guys get them in the 28-inch class. And then the 30-incher is still like a trout of a lifetime. And you can kind of count on one hand how many of those get caught, maybe a decade. But, you know, they do get caught. So, and they're river fish. I mean, with the exceptions of the Heckin Run, it's kind of unique. It's one of the few places on Earth that grow wild giant brown trout in rivers. Yeah. So that gets you excited.
In fact, he caught that right around the time we did the interview with him on the salmon fly hatch. And we put his picture up there on his page. So if you go to Bob Jacklin's page on our site, you'll see that brown that Brian just mentioned. It's a 30-inch, 10-pound brown.
June 16th, he caught that on a little caddis larva, of all things.
yeah. So he was real proud of that one. But anyway, there's big fish in that river. You just have to be good enough to be able to catch them.
We're lucky enough.
yeah. You sound like it, you know, from what you said, it's a challenging river. I mean, the fish are there, but it's not necessarily an easy river
It's a subtle river where the fish lie and where they position, and the change as the year goes on, and it's not always obvious in the most productive section. So, you know, you can tell a guy what flies are eating, and he'll come back scratching his head and frustrated at the end of the day. But you got to very much pay attention, more so than anything else, is to where the fish are. Really pay attention to where you're hooking fish. Try to pattern that. Are they in the fast water? Are they in some seams? Are they in slicks behind rocks? Really pay attention to that and try to build a pattern as the day goes on, and then focus on that same style of water as you progress down the river.
That's terrific. Well, you've done a great job in giving us a tour here, Brian, of the river. Any closing thoughts on the Madison you want to share with folks?
Well, you know, it's a famous river, and you really, I think, every, you know, avid angler should experience it. And don't forget about the many other great fisheries in the region. It'd be a shame to come to Montana and only fish the big famous rivers, because gosh, it seems like just about any little body of moving water in this western part of the state full of trout. So it's just a fun region in general to explore, you know, see the famous rivers, but also get out and get off the beaten path a bit.
Well, terrific. Well, let's wrap things up here, but stick with us, folks. We've got a few more things to cover tonight. We're going to be giving away that one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. And we'll also be giving away that one-year subscription to Hook Now, the online e-zine published by Dave Hughes and Rick Haisley and Kit Morris. So stick with us a few more minutes, and we'll get those prizes awarded. The Sacred Headwaters is a vast alpine basin up in northern British Columbia, where three of Canada's greatest wild salmon rivers, the Skeena, Ness, and Stikine, all begin their journeys to the Pacific Ocean. Here, adjacent to the renowned wilderness area, grizzly bears, stone sheep, and Osborne caribou exist in large numbers, and wild salmon return each year to spawn. There's currently a two-year moratorium on coal bed methane development in the Sacred Headwaters imposed by the British Columbia government. So we have less than a year remaining. Royal Dutch Shell subsidiary Shell Canada have not changed their intent for a fully industrialized coal bed methane project in the Sacred Headwaters. Sacred Headwaters is also rich in mineral and energy resources, including coal and coal bed methane, gas trapped in coal deposits. Royal Dutch Shell wants to turn the Sacred Headwaters into a coal bed methane gas field. If this plan goes ahead, the rich alpine ecosystems will be converted an industrial landscape with thousands of gas wells connected to a maze of pipelines and roads. If you want to look more into this and get involved and help the people in Canada out with preserving these sacred headwaters, go to www.skeenawatershed.com. That's www.skeenawatershed.com. And join the people up there in helping to protect this sacred headwaters. But just a reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, just take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section on tonight's show that says, what did you think of this show? Just click on the link and leave your comments. Well, now it's time to give away our prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from this show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but be sure to do so for the next show, because you don't want to miss out on some of these great prizes we give away. If you are the lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show and provide you with the information how to receive your gifts. So we'll get right into it. So let's see here. For the Federation of Fly Fish membership, one-year membership, a great organization to be part of. And if you're unfamiliar with them, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org, and join that organization. It's a great, great organization to be involved with. Jerry Miller in California is our winner there. Jerry Miller. So congratulations, Jerry. You just got yourself a one-year membership to the Federation. And if by chance you already have one, we'll get that extended for another year for you. And our next drawing is for a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. Fly Fusion is out of Calgary, Canada. You can find out more about them at flyfusionmag.com. Great magazine to learn from, and great photography and superb production. Dennis McDonald in Texas. Dennis McDonald in Texas is our winner of that. So congratulations, Dennis, on winning that one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. Well, Brian, we've got to give away this one-year subscription to Hook Now magazine by Dave Hughes, Rick Haisley, and Skip Morris. Those guys are just icons in the industry as well, and great people to learn from. So this is a great thing to win as well. Now, people are paying attention. Two-part question here, two-part question. First question is, what section is probably the most popular section from what to what? And I mean major points here, not minor points. And what is one of the big hatches that happen on the river that the fish eat so much of it they won't eat anymore? that Brian was talking about. So, two-part question. What's the most popular section from what to what, and what's the name of the hatch? Okay, we've got one here. Okay, Sheik, you got part of it right, salmon fly early June. That would qualify for the second part, but you didn't give me the answer to the first part. Brian, this one says 50-mile riffle salmon flies. That's not from what to what, so I don't think we're quite there yet. Lions Bridge to Innis?
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good?
Yeah. I mean, the 50-mile ripple is that section, too, but the if you're aiming beginning and end, yeah, Lions Bridge to Annis would be the full section, and that's on the Upton Addison. So,
okay, you're going to take that one in, Brian. Okay, so Ken Barr in Whitehall, Montana. Where's Whitehall? Is that by?
Whitehall's northeast of Bozeman.
Oh, okay.
It's up... I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Whitehall for Springs. Whitehall's just west of Bozeman, and it's kind of on the Jefferson River, so it's next range over to the Madison. So,
it's a neighbor.
He probably fishes it. So,
yeah.
He knows what he's talking about.
Anybody that lives within a couple hundred miles is considered a neighbor in Montana, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Just kidding. We know there's a few people that live up there. Hey, you don't want any more people living up there.
Yeah, we're happy. We'll kind of keep where it's at. We'll talk to one of the guys that's moving at us, and we'll call her good.
Okay, one a year. There you go. Well, Brian, so Ken, you're the winner of that. Thanks so much. I do have your email address here, so I will get that subscription to Hook Now Magazine taken care of for you. So thanks for playing, and thanks for everybody else for playing as well. Brian, thanks so much for being on the show tonight. I appreciate you taking your time out to be with us, and you certainly gave us an excellent tour of the river, and I think we're all more knowledgeable about it now, and we do come fish up there. We'll have a better idea where to go and when, so I appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Roger. It was a pleasure to participate.
Well, the our next show will be on May 23rd at 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern time, and that show is going to be with Paul Rose, and the show title is Cruising for Carp. And Paul Rose was sight fishing for tailing carp before it was hip, as he calls it. And he's tackled all the challenges associated with these freshwater bonefish and considers these explorations with his clients the basis for their saltwater training school when they're ready to go out for bonefish. So this is a great learning experience, and tune into that show to learn about fly fishing for carp, our freshwater bonefish, and something you can do almost anywhere in the world. So you can't find any other fish to fish for. There's always the carp that's sitting out there. So. Tune in with us on our next show for that, and we'll see you then. We'd like to thank Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Montana Angler Fly Fishing, and Keeney's Fly Shop for sponsoring our show tonight. If you'd like to consider sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. That's 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.